Hey everybody, this is Kelly with the All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast. I hope you all are staying safe out there right now. I know there's some weird things going on right now with, masks. You know, there's a lot of controversy going around with the mask mandates, especially here in Washington State, but, because I do work with the immune compromised and, you know, a lot of my family members are immune compromised, I really do please urge you all to, if you don't have a pre-existing condition, please wear your masks. But with that said, I am just going to jump right in. This week is going to be a little bit different. You know, normally I do research and really get into a topic, but this week I think I'm just going to do something, my own personal paranormal experiences. I've got a lot. So without any further ado, I'm just going to get started. So this week I decided to do things a little differently based off of the last week's show where I had said that, you know, we should do paranormal, our own personal paranormal stories. So that's what I'm going to do this week. So it's kind of hard to choose where to start. I don't want to go through my entire childhood, you know, that'd be a little weird. But I guess I could talk about what kind of got me into the paranormal, what really got me into paranormal. So basically when I was younger, we lived in this really old house. I thought it was built in 1912, but I believe it was built in 1918. I asked my mom, I can't remember what she had said, but, basically it was one of the first houses built in our part of the town once Spokane was first, being built upon in the early 1900s. And so therefore, it was old, very old house. And, you know, we used to hear footsteps up in our attic. And for the longest time, you know, we attributed it to first my dad's cousin and his wife and their daughter were living with us. And then after they got kicked out, my dad's brother moved in with us. And all of them, you know, stayed in the attic. So we would hear footsteps upstairs and we just thought, you know, it was Uncle Warren or, oh, it's so-and-so and their kid. But obviously, you know, because my family, they all eventually got kicked out. And so after they did, you know, we would still hear the voices up in the attic. We eventually turned the attic into our playroom, which is kind of messed up because, I mean, it was not insulated at all. There was, I mean, bare eaves, no insulation whatsoever. And, I mean, we would go up there in the middle of winter to play. And so, obviously, we knew nobody was up there. So, my parents always told us, oh, it's the pack rat. I didn't know at the time that a pack rat was just like a hoarder, kind of. And so, my mom basically weaved this story that, oh, it's this big, huge rat that, you know, he is kind of the king of the rats in our household. And, you know, I was like six. So obviously I believed it. I mean, I believe there was a monster in my walls named Brutus who protected us in our sleep. So, I mean, it wasn't too far off track. But, so we would hear these footsteps upstairs and we always, you know, thought it was this pack rat. And then I remember there was this one time, my sister remembers this too. Hi Jade. Hi Greg. So when I was about eight and my little sister was six, my parents were sleeping and we were just in our living room, you know, kind of just coloring, keeping ourselves busy. And the way that our house was built, because it was old, you know, we had a nice entryway that led into the into the living room, and then the dining room and the kitchen were basically right off of each other. So we could see through all, you know, right through the living dining room from the living room into the kitchen. And I remember seeing this little girl, and she was just completely dark, just couldn't see her face. Everything about her was just black. And I remembered thinking, Mickey, and saying, my little sister, I was like, Mickey, get off the fridge. You're going to get us in trouble. My sister was like, I'm right here next to you. And I mean, that was basically the end of it. We didn't talk about it ever again. I shouldn't say never again, but the rest of the time we lived there. When I was 10, just before I turned 11, we moved to a small town, another creepy house we lived in, but my parents ended up getting divorced, so we moved back into the home with my sister and my mom. And I kept my old room. My sister took my parents' old room, and my mom took the attic. And it was at that point that's when everything weird started happening to me. I started having really bad nightmares. I would always feel like somebody was watching me at night. I could not stand closets because I would always just feel like something was standing in my closet staring at me. And I know that's pretty common with kids, you know, with, you know, closets that were open and everything. But I mean, even during the day, I was terrified of that closet. I did not use it at all. All my dresser was in the actual bedroom. I did not use that closet whatsoever. And then my mom's friend Missy and her three kids moved in with us. So then it was us, you know, my sister sharing room with one, I called them my cousins. My sister sharing room with one cousin, me sharing room with the other cousin, and then our cousin Bubba living down in the basement. And I remembered before my parents got divorced, my dad had given me this really nice, old lamp. It used to be like an old timey kerosene lamp that had been converted with electricity. And I always kept it right next to the head of my bed because if I was feeling like I was being watched, I could just keep that light on and be able to see everything around me. And Veronica, like during this time, I was reading a lot of ghost books, trying to like make sense of things that were happening to me. But one night, you know, my cousin Veronica wanted us to rearrange the bedroom, and she wanted to put my lamp on the complete opposite side of the room. I've never been afraid of the dark. I want to preface this right now. I was not afraid of the dark itself. It was just this intense feeling like something was staring at me. And so she wanted to put the lamp on the complete opposite side of the room. And at this point, I was just having a complete mental breakdown. I was almost 12 years old at this point. And, you know, my mom did the best that she could with us. But usually with any disputes, she always took my cousin's side instead of ours because they're living with us. Like, we need to be open and inviting and not cause any problem and make their life worse. So no matter how worse they were making our lives. But at that point when she wanted to move the lamp to the opposite side of the room, I was like, no, absolutely not. And I was just ugly crying, like full on mental breakdown. And we went to the living room because she was like, well, let's go talk to your mom and my mom. Knowing that it would eventually, you know, it would be their side. And my mom actually put her foot down and was like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, if she's feeling these things, she needs that lamp near her. And I mean, now things are fine between all of us. You know, we were just dumb kids, but it was a really hard time for me. You know, I was starting to go through puberty. I was dealing with my parents' divorce. You know, it was just a really, really rough time. And I didn't think anything of it until I was 13 and I finally sat down with my mom and she told me, she was like, no, that place was super haunted. Like, completely haunted. There were so many things that happened in that house, and I just tried to change the subject because I didn't want to scare you girls because you guys had to live there. And fine, you know, until we moved into the house that my parents live in now. So we moved there when I was in 8th grade, so just before I turned 14. And immediately, right off the bat, you know, weird things happening. Not really weird things, just kind of like footsteps and stuff. But I didn't really say anything about it because I was like, you know, we haven't lived in a house in forever. You know, maybe this is just something that houses are supposed to do. Maybe it's just the house settling. You know, my parents and my little brother, who was 2 or 3 at the time, they were upstairs. My sister and I were downstairs, so maybe it's them. And then when I was I was freshman in high school. We were there about a year at this point. This is where things really started to change in my life. I had come home from school and I was sitting in the house waiting for my sister to get home. Because, you know, high school gets out before the middle school and the elementary school. My mom worked days and my dad was always, I don't know where he was. But I had gotten home from school and I was waiting for my sister to get home. I think he was dropping my little brother off with the nanny. That makes me sound like we were rich. We weren't rich. It was just a lady that came to help us with my little brother because my little brother had some problems. So I was sitting there waiting and I happened to look into the bathroom because something didn't feel right. So I looked into the bathroom and that's when I saw this little boy. Little brother's not home. He's 3 at the time, or 3 or 4. So I was like, well, what the heck? So I ran out of the house, freaking out. Would not go in until, you know, my sister was home. When I told my mom about it, she kind of was like, you're seeing things. Nothing's there. But then, you know, we started, my sister and I started getting into like the ghost hunting and stuff with the nanny, and we went to this abandoned house. Now this house, she had told us that the nanny had told us it was her and her little brother, adoptive brother. She had told us that she had found herself there one day. Didn't know how she got there. Apparently she told her friends and her family that, hey, follow me. I know a place to go. And she wanted to take us there because we were getting really into watching Ghost Hunters, Paranormal State, you know, any ghost hunting show that was on cable at the time. It was like 2006, I want to say, 2005. We ended up going. And we ended up going 3 separate times. And each time we went, something weird happened. And we always took a camcorder with us. You know, my mom was there with us and took a camcorder. We always captured everything. But every single time I said something was wrong in the house, something was following us. You know, it was, nobody really wants to believe their child can feel things, you know. And I don't like to use the term sensitive. I hate that term. But in this sense, you know, I have been pretty spot on in the past about my feelings. And sure enough, you know, we'd be rewatching the tape later on and we'd see stuff moving. We would see something, you know, we would hear things talking to us through the camera that none of us were saying. And things started to get really weird at our house. I 100% believe that we brought something home with us. And because, I mean, it was clear people were using this place for occultism and it was just very, very dark. I mean, at one point you could hear, as the camera was panning towards me, somebody saying, kill. There was also, this was during a phase 2 where I had my hair buzz cut. And we had found my little brother was waking up when we were watching the tape, so we would always pause it and then go take care of him, and then we'd come back and keep watching. And there was one spot where we had paused, and it was like there was a little me standing next to me. And, you know, originally we were thought, okay, well, maybe it's just the camera. You know, we paused it in the middle of the film rolling. It could very well have been like a double exposure, you know, something natural. Until later on, we went upstairs, and like the entire attic, you could tell it had been in a fire. And I don't remember how we found it, but there was this kind of, there was a false board in the ground, in the floor of the attic. And for some reason, I beelined it to it, and I pulled this hatch up in the floor. And there was like this little box, and inside it was a newspaper clipping about a father who had killed his son to try to reincarnate him. I think it was from like National Enquirer or something like that. Some kind of bogus, you know, trashy magazine. But the picture basically was me if I had been younger. And it was just really creepy. And my brother started waking up in the middle of the night screaming. You know, we never talked about these things in front of him because he was four. You know, we did not want to scare him. But he started having night terrors. He would scream in the middle of the night, "No, no, please don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me." And it was just really, really creepy. It got to a point where none of us, excluding my stepdad is a 100% skeptic. He does not believe in the paranormal whatsoever. But all of us girls, you know, we would not go to the bathroom alone. We would not shower alone. My mom, you know, I'm a freshman in high school, and I had to have my mom walk me to my room in the basement because I was so scared. And it was just something dark, something very, very dark came home with us. And the third time that we had went, you know, each time getting worse and worse, you'd think we would have learned our lesson the second time, but we went back a third. And somehow we ended up getting separated. And my mom, I was alone. It was like we blacked out. None of us knew how we came to be separated. And, I ended up alone running through this house trying to find my mom and my sister and the two nannies, and finally found my sister and April up in the attic. And then I went downstairs. I thought they were following me. They didn't. So I ended up going to the cellar. So it was one of those old, it kind of reminded me of the Blair Witch Project, where it was like a cellar that you have to get through from the outside, and it was all like rock. No lights, no windows, no nothing. But there was a hole in the wall, the mortar, I want to say is what it's called, that led completely underneath the house. And my mom was like, something's moving down here. So she was trying to get the camera in there to like check to see what's moving in this creepy ass fucking hole. And she came back out, and somehow this thing of barbed wire had like got caught around her neck. And it was, she, if it weren't for me and Mikey being there, she would have been strangled, or not strangled, her neck would have been really cut and probably gotten freaking tetanus. But we had taken the deed to the house. And that's how we knew that the house had not been, it had been vacant since 1984. And I mean, this, where the house was, it was literally in the middle of a field surrounded by mansions. So, I mean, it was just this way out of the place house that was just did not belong there. And we took it. And that's when things really intensified. And my mom, Mikey and April, and then their little brother, Mikey and April's, they ended up going back a fourth time to return the deed because it was, you know, we're sorry we took this property. Please, you know, accept our apology, you know, type thing. Trying to make amends for this wrong that we had done. Eventually, you know, things went away. Over time, you know, my mom still deals with the little boy in the house that she has seen since the time that I had seen it. And at that point, that's when she really started to believe me, was when she saw the little boy. And she was like, you know what, I believe you 100%. I'm really sorry that I didn't. But I have not been wrong since, or once. I've never been wrong. But I mean, yeah, it was just weird. And then another time, after we moved to Colfax, we got our first apartment and everything. Nate was two. My son was two. And after we moved, I mean, before we moved into this apartment, it was a lot of us living in this little 500 square foot house. His dad, my daughter's dad, me, his uncle, my sister, we had another roommate, like off and on, it was just a whole bunch of us living together. And so Nate never really had his own room or anything like that. So when we moved into this apartment, it was just me, him, and my daughter's dad. It was before he got pregnant with my daughter. And Nate all of a sudden started freaking out at bedtime. No, please don't make me go night-night. Please don't make me go night-night. And I was like, Nate, why? And he's like, because of the grandma ghost. Excuse me? The what? The grandma ghost. I was like, okay. You know, I didn't want him to be right. I never wanted him to feel like something was wrong with him, because the way that I know my mom did everything that she could for us, and she thought she was doing the right thing, but when she basically minimized the things that I was experiencing, it kind of made it me feel like I was going crazy. And I didn't want my kids to ever feel that way. So I sat him down and I said, okay, what does the grandma ghost look like? He said she has red curly hair and she wears a very big baggy dress and she's old. Well, when I was pregnant with him, we lived with my son's great-grandmother. She had red curly hair, she wore muumuus, and she was obviously old. And she was, Nate meant everything to her. She absolutely loved that kid so much. And she had passed away about a year earlier. And so I just told him, you know, it's okay. It's great. It's Grandma Kathy. I was like, does she try to hurt you at all? And he said, no. I was like, well, what does she do? He said, she stands in my door and watches me. I said, she's probably just watching to make sure you're okay. And I think that's the only time I've ever had a ghost in my home that I was not terrified of. You know, we would hear things moving. His toys would be playing. We'd hear dishes moving in the kitchen before we even had any cats or anything. And I would just say, Kathy, everything's fine. I'm doing everything that I can for Nate. I know you love him, but it's okay. You don't need to make yourself known. We know you're here. And over time, he just quit. He quit seeing her. And I'm pretty sure she passed on, but just weird stuff. And then we had this, I don't know if anybody watches Ghost Adventures or Paranormal Lockdown, I believe is the other one, with Nick Groff and Christina, I'm drawing a blank on her last name. They did an episode at the abandoned hospital in Colfax. It's called St. Ignatius Hospital. It was built in the early 1900s. I've spent a lot of time there. A lot of time. So the building was built, it started off as a small little one-room shack, basically. And then it turned into a small, it turned into a house, and then it became the hospital. And eventually we built another hospital in up the road, and it turned into a assisted living facility for a period of time. And then I believe in 2006, it was shut down because of asbestos. So the assisted living facility, even though they had, even though it's assisted living, it was for the mentally disabled and the physically disabled. So even though, you know, they were disabled, they were able to go and walk around town by themselves. You know, a lot of them, even though they were, some of them were not fully mentally there, or they were mentally still children, even though they were adults, they still were able to leave during the day and kind of go to Rosar's and just kind of get out of the facility. So, and the last few people that stayed at St. Ignatius, they moved all of the people to, we call it Paul's Place, literally just one block down. It's on these little side streets overlooking Colfax. And the last people they kept there is what they referred to as the tube feeders. So these were the, trying to think of the most delicate way to say this without being ableist. They were basically the people that were in vegetative states. And so they were literally down in the these two rooms that were attached, like they were all just one big room converted, two rooms converted into one big room. That's what I was trying to say. And they ended up passing away there. And obviously, I mean, people pass away. It was a hospital. But when I first started going out to Colfax, my dad lived right across the street from it. Like, if you stood in the bathroom, you'd look right through the windows of the hospital. Excuse me. And so I started going out to visit him out there when I was 15, 16, oh, 16. And we have photos. I mean, we would go inside there and we would play hide and seek tag. We would kind of just do our own thing. And it, I mean, not do our own thing. Like, we basically, our family spent time there. And so, I mean, I got to know that place inside and out. I knew where to avoid, what floors to avoid because of water damage. I knew what places were bad, like spiritually. I knew what parts of the hospital were safe to be in. Like, knew this place inside and out because we spent so much time there. I mean, when my dad and my stepmom would fight, like, he would stay in the hospital in one of the old abandoned apartments that were used for the doctors. He called it his little apartment. And so, I mean, we spent a lot of time there. So we moved, after we moved to out of that one apartment, we moved up the hill, just one block down. And we had these two apartments that were converted into one. One was a studio, one was a one bedroom. And they converted it into one big apartment. It was on the top floor, so my living room windows, I had big windows, really big windows. I could literally look across into one of the most haunted rooms in the entire hospital, known as Rose's room. This woman would talk to her finger when she was alive. This is a real woman who was living there when it was the care facility. She would talk to her finger, and she would curse at you. And now, if you go into that room, sometimes you can feel somebody pushing on you and you can hear somebody cursing at you to get the F out. So, and you can sometimes even see her in the windows. It's like just a quick glance, but you could, from what I've heard, you could see her. I never saw her, but Yeah, so I spent a lot of time there. And in October of 2015, started having some little health issues that we were trying to figure out. So I was off of work one night because I was just too sick to go. And I was basically bedbound. So I was scrolling Facebook, you know, as you do when you're sick or healthy, if you're me. And I see a post. And it's this paranormal group that was based here in Spokane. And they were saying that they were invited to do a private investigation of the hospital. Because originally they were going to turn them into apartments. But the asbestos, it was not, they couldn't do it. It was going to be too costly. So they decided to open it up on the weekends in October for public little tours to bring tourism back to Colfax and to bring in revenue. So I had commented on it and I was like, hey, I used to hang out there as a teenager. I avoid the fourth floor because there's severe water damage. The nuns' quarters on the very top leading to the roof are the most haunted. I will not go up there. The children's floor is also super haunted. The morgue isn't very haunted at all. I didn't feel anything down in the morgue. And I was just like listing everything off. And I get a message from the group. And they're like, hey, can you call our office? Gave me their number, and so I call them. They're like, we wanted to give you a invitation to come do a legitimate ghost hunt with us next weekend. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, this is a dream come true. And so that's how I got involved with a paranormal investigation team. And I asked them, you know, hey, is it okay if I invite a friend? My good friend Lori out in Colfax, you know, she grew up there. She knew about the hospital. She's been in there multiple times herself. She's a big believer in the paranormal. She listens to the podcast. She's probably one of my biggest listeners, aside from you, Eric. And so they were like, yeah, sure. So I text her and I was like, hey, what are you doing Saturday night? And they were like, or she was like, well, I work until midnight, so do you. We work the same shift. And I was like, no, but I mean after that. And she was like, well, going home? Why? So I told her about the invitation, and she was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So following weekend, you know, we get off work at midnight. I think it was 11:30. We drive all the way to Colfax because we worked 15 miles away. So we drove, immediately stopped at my house so we could bundle up, and then we walked over. And it was interesting, to say the least. We went with the Chamber of Commerce. She was, her name is Val Gregory, I believe. And she is head of the Chamber of Commerce, and so she kind of did the investigation with us, you know, made sure that we were staying in safe areas, that we weren't doing anything to damage the building, and basically kind of be our tour guide, in a sense, to give us, you know, all of the complete history and stuff. And the whole time, I was just getting these weird feelings, like that breath on the back of your neck type feeling. And especially in the nuns' quarters where I had told them I don't like going, and the children's floor. I don't like those spots. Well, we go up to the nuns' quarters and I'm telling them, guys, I can feel it. Something's here. And they were like, well, shh, let's be quiet. Sure enough, you could hear footsteps coming up the stairs. And we're literally standing in front of the stairs looking down. We're like, what the hell is that? It was really creepy. But luckily, they didn't leave me alone, because that's been my experience before, is anytime that I say, hey, something's not right, I usually get left alone to kind of fend for myself. not fun. Not a fun feeling. So we go down to the basement. There was a gentleman that lived there. But after everybody kind of got moved from the convalescent home down to Paul's place, there was a gentleman who forgot that they had moved. So he went out and about to Rosar's and went home, but he didn't go to Paul's place. He went back to the facility and ended up falling down the elevator shaft and dying, which was really, really sad. I mean, if even now his shoe was still in there, which is kind of triggering for me. When we went down there to the basement, because it was a very sad feeling, very melancholy, not a dangerous feeling, but just like overwhelming sadness. But there was a hatch in the wall, and it had been propped up with a broom because it wouldn't stay shut. And I guess when they did their walkthrough earlier in the day to kind of get a lay of the facility, you know, before they did their big investigation, that's when they had propped the broom up against it. But when we went back down there, the broom was completely gone. And we still have no clue where that broom went. But the door was just wide open. And I mean, we tried pushing on it, and the most it would open is just like cracked. It wouldn't like swing all the way open. So that was really weird. But we ended up ending the night. We went back to the main floor. Or no, we went to the children's ward first. The children's floor. And there was just this weird... Everybody was kind of walking down the hall, but I kind of stayed behind because I was just like... I don't know, it was a weird thing where I just was like, I'm not going to move. And all of a sudden I heard growling behind me, and I was like, nope, I know, I've seen horror movies, I know what's coming, I'm not staying anymore. Like, I'm not being left alone. And so I went back up I caught up with them. They were on the complete opposite side of the floor. And then we went back to the main floor because we were like, all right, I think this is going to end it for the night. Hi, Frost. So we were on the main floor and we realized there was a staircase that we had not gone down. And so we were like, Okay, so before we went upstairs, we had found a ball. We had tossed it to the other side of the hospital. And so half the group separated. They went to go down to the other side of the hall, and we were at the entrance on the complete opposite side. And we found this staircase, and so we went down there. And at this point, I have never been one to provoke. I don't believe in provocation. I do not like it whatsoever, especially if you don't know what you're dealing with. But I was feeling ballsy because, you know, I was here with a professional team. Like, they know what to do. Nothing's gonna happen to me if they're here. So we're downstairs. It was two of the investigators, me and my friend Lori, and I start provoking, and I'm just like, the leader of the group was like, all right, this is your last chance, like, we're gonna turn the camera off, we're gonna head home. And I was like, they're not gonna do nothing, they're just a bunch of pussies, like, just things that I would never, ever say in a million years. And I was just completely shocked with myself. And so all of a sudden, though, we start hearing dogs barking and the floor is rumbling, like, not above us, like, the entire basement is rumbling. And it was where the tube feeders were. And it was just, we booked it back up the stairs because we thought, well, maybe it's the other team they're just messing with us, and we wanted to catch them doing it. No, they were still on the complete opposite side of the hospital. So that was pretty weird. Lori was scared to go home that night. she was like, please don't make me walk to my car alone. I was like, your car is parked outside my apartment. How are you going to walk home alone? But yeah, and I did notice some weird things happening at the apartment after that. I would hear rocking, like a rocking chair rocking on my floor in the living room when we did not own a rocking chair. We've never owned a rocking chair. I had my camera, I had my phone, and I was recording because our door didn't shut all the way. And, you know, we had kids. We didn't want the door to shut all the way anyways in case, you know, my son has his health conditions. If he's puking or anything, you know, I need to be up in the middle of the night to take care of him. And so my daughter's dad passed out, completely passed the fuck out. And it was that same night that we went to the hospital, and I looked over and I had just my Sensi warmer as like a night light. So that way I could see if I needed to get up in the middle of the night for the kids. And the the door that led to the hallway right outside our bedroom, pitch black, but there was this like orange strobing light in the hallway that only showed up on my camera. And at first I thought it was, you know, the Sensi. So I turned on my flashlight and I turned off the Sensi. Like, I turned the flashlight on my phone on. Nope. Still same thing. And I was like, okay, I'm calling it a night. Shut the phone off, covered my head, went to sleep. I was like, nope, I'm not even going to deal with it. I'll deal with you in the morning. I ended up moving out. I hated living there. Especially when it was just me and my son. I did not like it. It was scary. It was a very uncomfortable feeling, that breath on the, you know, somebody's breathing over your shoulder type thing. And no, I don't do that. But I've had a lot of paranormal experiences, and it has led me to have this amazing podcast, and I love it. I love what I do. But it has, you know, even though I've had these terrifying experiences, it hasn't swayed me in my pursuit, I guess. My dream goal, as much as I would love to be a pediatric nurse, you know, the goal is to be a paranormal investigator, like have my own paranormal team. Like, I want it. Do you believe in any of this, Frost?
I do. I actually am a former paranormal investigator. I've been on a couple of teams, been in a couple of serious locations.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I did a partial paranormal investigation in a place called Fort Henry out of Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Mm-hmm. I've actually, my friend suggested that I investigate that. Not investigate, but like do an episode on it.
Totally haunted. Absolutely. Taps actually did an episode there a number of years back.
With the original Ghost Hunter team?
The original team, yeah.
Huh. I'll have to find it.
And I actually did an investigation of a place also in Kingston called Rockwood Insane Asylum for Rockwood Asylum for Criminally Insane.
Ooh.
Which is a asylum from the 1860s.
Wow.
That closed down in the early 2000s.
That's amazing. What can you tell me about what you experienced there?
Well, that one's the one that's the most odd, because we had a incident happen that I've never heard of happening before.
What do you mean?
Well, the facility is quite a large facility, but it only has about five floors, and a basement.
Okay.
And we're up on the fourth floor, so the second top floor. and it was a team of five in total, and three went left off the stairwell, and two went to the right. I was the second person in the team of two. And this is the same floor that the electroshock occurred.
Okay.
On, and we're quite a distance away, almost on opposite sides of the building from each other, or the wing of the building from each other, and we could still hear the other team through ductwork.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about a decade after the facility's been shut down. So we're walking, and we're filming, we're recording, and we're taking temperature readings, if I remember correctly. Now, this is about 10 years ago, so it's, memory's a little shaky on what we were doing. But so we got to a point, and we hear this scream for help.
Oh, wow.
It was a female scream for help, which is really unusual, because this wasn't exactly a co-ed, if I remember correctly, this wasn't really a co-ed floor, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't, I'm not entirely sure, but, and me and the person I was with reacted at the exact same time. Not in the way of one person reacts and then a person reacts to the person reacting, but we both reacted at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. And started running in the same direction.
Yeah.
And we searched, and we went up the floor, and we searched the top floor, and we couldn't find anything. Now, hearing things isn't exactly abnormal. Unusual, but not abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
What was unusual was me and him were both carrying two pieces of equipment that would pick up audio.
And nothing was picked up on the audio.
Nothing was picked up on audio from four different sources.
That's amazing. That's so unusual. You would think that if you heard it audibly, that it would be picked up on the recording devices. Because typically, like, you know, if you're not hearing it with your, if it's loud enough to be heard on, with your own ears, there's enough energy for it to have been picked up on the recorders. That is weird.
Yep. Never run into it before, never run into it since.
Wow. Now, did you have any females on your team? Did they say anything about it?
We could hear her through the ductwork, okay. So we know it wasn't her. We only had one.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's unusual, but the funny thing about the place, though, it's a funny story. So we go into this building, and we had to have special equipment because it being so old that it had shut down, there was asbestos floating in the air.
Yeah.
So we had to have special breathing equipment. Now, so we go in, and we go up a floor. There's a elevator shaft, and there's a set of stairs that spiral around the shaft.
Mm-hmm.
And we go up the floor, turn around, go behind the elevator, and there on the wall, we have a picture somewhere. I'm not sure if I still have it, but there was a picture. And you could see the asbestos floating in the air in the picture.
It looks very dusty.
And there's a poster on the wall. It just has two words, and it caused us to be laughing for about 20 minutes.
Oh.
Just says two words. Breathe easy.
That's ironic.
Well, with the asbestos floating in the air, it's just...
Yeah, and you're wearing, like, the big, huge respirators on your face.
Yeah.
Any other interesting places that you've been to?
I was to the missing villages of Ontario.
There's missing villages?
It's called the missing villages because when the St. Lawrence Seaway was created, they had to shift and move some of the villages.
Oh, okay.
And so there's still some buildings that are submerged. And and some of the buildings got moved to a museum-like land. And it's called the Missing Villages because it represents all the villages that no longer exist.
Okay. I was thinking this was like a Roanoke situation.
I'm sorry, I missed that?
Oh, I was thinking this was like a Roanoke situation, you know, the colony that disappeared.
No, no. Just an interesting little place. Okay. Historically cool. We didn't catch anything, no.
Okay.
But yeah, Fort Henry, yeah, that's about the most interesting places I've been.
Okay. Yeah, when I was working at my job in Pullman, I was in the process of creating my own paranormal team, which was really interesting that I found a lot of coworkers in my department alone that were like, yeah, sign me up. We were talking prices for, like, equipment, like, how we were going to divvy it up, who was going to buy what, where we were going to go, like, just all of these plans. And then I got sick and lost my job. But, I mean, I know a lot of people that just don't believe. I've unfortunately dated a lot of people that don't believe. And so that's why it surprised me when I, you know, at my work to find so many people that actually do share the same beliefs as me. You know, I will say, there at the beginning of the episode, I was talking about the abandoned house that I went to as a teenager with my mom and my sister, and you know, we experienced really negative things. We brought stuff home. We had attachments. Which, I mean, now I know how to properly handle those things where I'm not afraid of it anymore. But even now, like, where it was, we called it the Forker House. It was on this road called, Jacob's Lane and Forker Road. But it was this dilapidated old house, had nobody living in it since 1984. We got the deed and we took it home. But it was literally in the middle of this field, surrounded by mansions. And so it was just this weird place for it to be. And it's since been torn down and replaced with a mansion, but every so often I'll get a bug up my butt and I'm like, I need to drive past it. I gotta go check. And so I'll go once, maybe every few years, and drive past it. And even now, that mansion, nobody lives there. And it's been, I think it was 2014 or 2004 or 2005 when I went. And still nobody living there. And I very much feel that it's an attachment to the land. You know, people were doing occult Satanism there. I really feel like it's opened up some kind of doorway to something to pass through. And I think it's stained the land, so to speak. And I mean, even if you're driving up there, you'll see little, it's on this cliff road. And even on the side of the road leading up to, like, driveways and stuff, where it's not on the cliff, you'll see these weird little, they looked like, they were some kind of stones, but they had symbols carved into them. And we unfortunately never looked at the symbols to, like, study them or anything like that, because we were always like, let's get out of here, you know. But I'm really wondering if those were some kind of, like, a blessing for the properties. Because, I mean, over here is all Native American, you know, we're right off of the reservation, and all of our towns are Native American names and everything. So I don't know. It's been really weird.
Where are you?
Washington State.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so everything is all Native American.
Just a tiny bit further away from me.
Wait, are you on the opposite side of the country?
I'm in Ontario, Canada.
Is that on the other side of Canada? Okay. East Coast?
It's above New York State.
Okay. I have a friend that lives over there. So.
Where I live is directly across the lake, Lake Ontario from Sackett's Harbor, New York.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, we've been meaning to make a trip up there. go see the I've never been to Canada. Like, I live 3 hours away from Canada. Never been. Never once. But it's a dream.
Last July was the first time in 22 years I had gone down to the States.
Really?
So, yeah.
How did you like it?
It was fine until I broke down in Texas.
Not a good part of the country to be in.
Oh, I don't know. They're perfectly friendly down there.
What are your guys' what's your view on Donald Trump? We hate him.
I have many, many, many views on that man. None of them...
Not good.
None of them good.
That's a loaded question, Eric said. No, anytime something about Canada pops up on my Facebook about how you guys have responded to the coronavirus and your guys' health care, you know, anything that is different than the U.S., I'm always commenting to my friend. I'm like, hey, is this true? Hey, what about this? Or if I share something about Donald Trump, she's always commenting. She's like, God, I do not envy you at all. Like, I don't either.
Well, we have a politician up here that's not all that great ourselves.
Trudeau,
Premier of Ontario, is a pretty dim-witted person.
Are we talking about Justin Trudeau?
No, that's the Prime Minister.
Oh, okay.
There's the Prime Minister, and then there's the premiers of each of the provinces and territories, and Ontario has one there's plenty of not nice words too.
Yeah. Okay, guys, sorry, I didn't realize that I had run out of recording time for that segment, but if you want to watch the rest of the episode, you can either find my Facebook page at All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast, or go to getvocal.com and you can watch it there. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Make sure you're washing your hands, social distancing, and wearing masks, and checking up on your elderly and your immune-compromised friends and family. I hope you all have a wonderful week and stay safe. Bye.